I really feel we need to get a global community of positivity around what we do and how we change things. There is going to be no better time than now, post-COVID. Never before has our industry been busier and more important. We're really well placed to demonstrate our value.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm joined today by Charles Cameron. Charles is the CEO of RCSA Australia and New Zealand and the Vice President of the World Employment Confederation, the global lobby group for the recruitment, staffing, and HR services industry. With qualifications in economics and labor law, Charles has specialized in advising and representing the recruitment and staffing industry for over 20 years. He's a passionate advocate for labor market intermediaries and consultants, and he's really driven and passionate about the role of professional recruitment consultants in inspiring people to be better through work. Charles, welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
G'day, Mark. Good to be with you, and g'day to all your listeners.
Fantastic. So you were referred to me by our mutual friend, Greg Savage, who's been on the show a couple of times. How long have you known Greg?
Look, since I've been involved with RCSA, which predates my time of commencing as CEO in 2016, so I reckon I've known Greg for close to 10 years. And with his new book out and doing a lot more online, it's pretty hard not to know Greg Savage. I think Greg came up as one of the top 10 HR influencers on a list recently. And all power to him, mate.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's been a huge supporter of my work and a mentor to me for over 10 years. We actually know a lot of people in common. Do you know Neil Carberry, the chief executive of the REC in the UK?
I'm drinking his whiskey as we speak, mate. We had a big win on a large lobbying campaign here in Australia, and he very kindly, in celebration, sent me a great Scotch whiskey. And I thought just to get the, a bit of free flow on the podcast, I thought I'll have a wee nip, as he might describe it. So I know you very, very well.
Awesome. Yeah, he's a Scotsman as well, originally.
And a lover of ice hockey too, yeah, by the way. So,
Is that right?
The reason I raised it, we were in Montreal when COVID hit, and it was the last time I was overseas with the WEC, and we're all ready to go out and see a bit of hockey up in Montreal, but it got cancelled and we all got sent home. So there you go.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. I'll need to ask Neil about that next time I speak to him. So Neil has been on the show. Another big Aussie supporter of the recruitment industry, Jason Elias.
Yep.
You know Jason?
Definitely know Jason very well. He's a great member and, of course, is a chair of our New South Wales ACT Council for here at RCSA. So, yeah, definitely know him well. He's got an increasingly large global profile as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's awesome. So he's been on the show as well. So listen, let's dive into this. But just in terms of context, how did you get into the recruiting industry?
Yeah, great question. Look, probably going to show my age here, Mark, but back in the 90s, I was working for Australia's largest employer body, the Australian Industry Group. And I was giving advice out to a whole range of different members. I was a young guy then and sat on the phones and gave phone-based advice. And I remember once one of the senior directors of the organisation came to me and said, "Oh, Charles, what are we going to do? All these what we call here labour hire firms or staffing firms that keep overusing the advisory service. We're going to have to try and put a lid on it." So in my mind, I sat there over the next year or so. I thought, wow, if they're big users of the service, there's obviously some really nuanced and critical, I guess, requirements within the staffing industry in Australia. So how can I actually leverage that from a commercial point of view? So I decided at that point in time, I thought, well, third-party employment, staffing, labour hire, agency work, whatever we want to call it around the globe, mate, I made a decision that how can I leverage that from a commercial point of view? I decided that, best thing I could do, go and work within a recruitment firm for a couple of years to really understand the commercials around it. So I went off and I did that, probably the smartest decision I ever made, because I still to this day rely upon that and get inside the minds of business owners and really really understand what drives them and their salespeople and their consultants. And after that, I started my own consulting firm that specialized in the recruitment and staffing industry. So, yeah, that's how I got into it. I was really just starting to think, how do we turn what could be seen as a problem or overuse into a solution? And, after a period of time, you know, over a few mergers and acquisitions, I found my way in as CEO of RCSA Australia and New Zealand.
Oh, wow, that's cool. So what are the sorts of issues or questions that recruiting firms were coming to you with and that you then supported them through your own consulting practice?
Yeah. So look, when we talk recruiting firms, primarily my interest was with what we might describe here in Australia, staffing or labour hire or agency work. And the issues there were the fact that the law here in Australia, and I still think primarily around the world, Mark, I know in the US it's still pretty unsettled, this idea that there was going to be an imposition of a legal obligation upon a staffing firm in the same way as a traditional employer might have to deal with that law. So whether it's health and safety, discrimination law, minimum employment entitlements, all that type of thing. But the problem was there were three parties rather than two parties to this relationship. So I started looking around and started looking at concepts around co-employment that, of course, exist in the US. But here, the unions and others have been trying to really develop out this idea of co-employment to suggest that there should be, you know, three parties responsible, where there are, of course, three parties primarily influencing the employment relationship. But the law in Australia just hadn't caught up. So I took it upon myself to start thinking, well, how do we make sure that our law is going to be fit for purpose over the course of not only the next few years, but the next few decades. So here we are, mate, almost 25 years after that event. And look, our law's done a little bit to catch up. A good case example, in New Zealand recently, they introduced new law called the Triangular Employment Law that really holds clients accountable for circumstances where they do something wrong with an agency worker or a worker in a staffing situation. Similarly, we're seeing the removal of definitions of employees and changing it with workers and persons conducting business or undertakings. I won't bore you with the intricacies, but we're definitely seeing the evolution. But one of the more interesting things here in Australia, and I know it's certainly taken hold in the UK and the US, is how we deal with the platform workers and the digital workers who are being introduced through algorithms rather than people, which might be something we can talk about a little bit later. But that's probably the next frontier. So for me, in summary, I just love law that is unsettled. I love trying to assist in evolving law and systems and people and processes and really making politicians and the broader economy actually understand the value of our industry.
Fantastic. Well, let's talk about that then. What do you see as being the importance of genuinely professional recruitment and staffing consultants?
I think great recruitment professionals have this ability to get inside the mind of individuals and find something that they didn't themselves know was there. And I think many within the Australian and New Zealand market who aren't involved or don't understand recruitment and staffing will probably sit there and say, hey, how hard is this? You know, you've probably got a few mates or colleagues who are looking for a job. You've got a few clients who need somebody. All I've got to do is marry them up and there you go. I get 20% of their first year income. The great recruitment consultants, of course, do so much more than that. And of course, Greg would articulate this a lot better than I would. But getting inside their minds, understanding what it is that they have, how it is that we can assist them to transition skills from old economy jobs to new economy jobs, really then supporting them. And I really want to emphasize that element of agent in this. I think agent can be flipped a couple of ways. In some cases, it's seen as a bit of maybe a dirty word. I know it might have even been speaking to Neil or one of his predecessors. I don't know if you know Kevin Green over in the UK. Yeah, but I remember him, or it might have even been some of our, there are plenty of UK recruiters here in Australia talking about it being, oh, gee, it's all a bit high street, isn't it? But for me, agency is actually about, you know, talent agent. I recently put together another great t-shirt, you know, which is RCSA talent agent, because I want to see agents being seen a little bit like, you know, agents on behalf of celebrities or great sports people. And in many ways, what they can do is find a market for them that they would never be able to find themselves, a little bit like a publicist might do. And I really want to try and change the way in which people look at recruitment agents rather than them just so-called clipping the ticket on the way through. They do so much more. And as we know, and we really value here in Australia at RCSA, the value that we provide in terms of not only changing individuals, but through empowering them to find that next role, empowering their family, which then flows through to their community and then through the community into the economy. But we've got to be smarter because it's a little bit of an unknown art. And for me, that's the fundamental thing, finding something in somebody that they didn't know was there and then being able to allow that to really assist them from a financial point of view and then deliver great value back to a company, a government or an economy. That's the crux for me, Mark.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, that I agree 100%. And let me just pick up on a couple of the points you made there. One being the difference between simply the transactional elements of recruitment being the introduction or referral of, you know, a person to a company, and being the intermediary that, that affects that introduction. I think that, at some level could be done by an algorithm, right? In terms of matching, you know, a CV with a job spec. But this is still ultimately a human business. You're dealing with human beings are not logical, not rational. We are driven by emotion. We have, you know, drives, motivations, some of which we don't even know ourselves. As you pointed to, which, you know, a great recruitment consultant or agent, we'll talk about that word in a second, really understands the human condition and can form trusted relationships with companies and individuals where they really get deep inside, you know, insight into and understanding into that person's motivations, why they might or might not want to change jobs or join a particular organization, how that's going to line up with their own goals and aspirations and so on. And I just don't see a computer ever being able to do that, to manage the whole process of people through the emotional side of this transition or this journey of changing jobs. And so that skill set, which Greg talks about a lot as being the craft of recruiting and, you know, sophisticated selling is key. Can we just talk about this? Now, some people may say it's semantics, whether you refer to yourself as an agent or a consultant or some other term. And there is some sense in which agent can be used as a negative or a derogatory and in a similar way to, you know, a real estate agent. It's sort of lumping us in with that profession. Whereas I like the spin you put on it, which is that of a sports agent. You are representing or acting on behalf of someone in order to uncover opportunities and negotiate, you know, that win-win agreement between two parties, which I think makes a lot of sense, especially now as we're shifting to a very candidate-driven or candidate-short, skills-short market, where the importance of the candidate is on the rise. And in that case, the idea of being an agent or a talent agent is the word you use, makes a lot of sense. You might remember back in episode 43, I talked to Plamen Ivanov, the executive chairman of iIntro. If you missed it, it's well worth going back into the archives and having a listen. One of the things we talked about was a way for recruiters to shift the conversation with prospects away from fees and make it all about value. iIntro has created a tool called the Bad Hire Calculator that you can show to your prospects that proves to them that your recruitment service will save them potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. When you can do that, the exact fees you charge almost become immaterial because you've proved that you will save the client the most money in the long run. If you'd like to add this tool to your arsenal, you'd be pleased to know that I've partnered with iIntro and they're offering a 25% discount to listeners of the Resilient Recruiter podcast. All you have to do to claim this discount is book a free consultation and mention my name or this podcast. Just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retained, follow the instructions, and iIntro will take care of the rest. That's recruitmentcoach.com/retained. You touched on, but I'd like to go deeper on the economic and social contribution of professional recruitment and staffing firms.
Mm.
Could you elaborate on that?
So let's just go back to the word agent for a moment. I mean, what sure. I love is the fact that in this day and age, many individuals are looking at work completely differently. Certainly, and it's the argument I regularly use. Again, you might have picked up, I have a bit of a passion about ensuring that we have the right settings, the right regulations to reflect the way we're living and working. So what do we see? We see a lot of individuals, certainly here in Australia and New Zealand, and from my discussions with all of my WEC colleagues around the world, and they're not just young, but what are people who have evolved and transitioned, what are they looking for? They're looking for agency. And what is agency? Agency is about freedom. Agency is about empowerment. Agency is about your capacity to make the decisions you want to make. And again, you'll see a few. They're not slogans, but they're simple ways of trying to define what we do and how we do it. And it's very much when it comes to agency work. It's about people are wanting to fit work around life, where in the past you had to fit life around work. So that is agency for me. So it's an empowering word. And I want to bring it back to this idea that agency, when you have a great agent, you have a great relationship, they empower you. They empower you with options. They empower you with market information. They empower you with the capacity to influence and guide your decision making. They can empower you and give you an agency by saying, don't do that. I would recommend you don't. And that's having some of those hard discussions and decisions. And I'm going to maybe jump on the comment you made before, which was around this idea of being aligned with real estate agents. I wonder whether they get a bad rap as well. I mean, look, similar to a job, we probably make more decisions around jobs these days than our parents did. But the reality is when you buy a house, it's a pretty big deal. What we see, and I don't know if it's the same in the US or your listeners in the UK, but here in Australia, we still might see a lot of online platform introductions for people who are looking for short-term accommodation. It might be accommodation as I just did, go skiing in Queenstown, New Zealand. If I was going to buy a house in Queenstown, New Zealand, I would not be relying on a platform, okay? I want to see somebody. I want to hear what they say. I want them to tell me, and I want to align with and find out if they have the same family values as me, the same social connections, the same need for support and infrastructure. Do they have the same hobbies? I want them to be able to read me. And I really don't feel, look, it will improve. We've got AI and it's starting to read people a little bit better, but nothing reads people as well as people. And this is why recruitment, genuine recruitment professionals who have a true art will always be relevant. I do think in these short-term engagements of maybe lower value, we are going to see the rise or continue rise of the platforms. But I reckon when it comes to the permanent placement recruitment, I really don't see that it's going to be certainly challenged as greatly as we would in the contingent market, if I could put it that way. So this is what I love. I really genuinely believe that when we do our job well, we absolutely do change lives. The problem we've got, Mark, is that we're not particularly good at selling the value of what we do, and I don't know why. So it's my challenge is to get out there and collect stories. And we do a lot of that in Australia. We're trying to do it at the WEC level. We've got to get the human stories out there of how you have changed somebody's life, their family's life, what are the virtues of what you do. So, look, I may not have answered your question generally, but I really do want to emphasize that point around agency, freedom, control. control and responding to the way we live and work and care for one another, which is completely different to the way we even did it when I first entered the labour market back in the early 90s.
Wow, great. Absolutely good points. Listen, I have nothing against real estate agents. My niece actually is a real estate agent, and she's fantastic. We have a bit of a chip on our shoulder sometimes, perceiving, you know, about the way that our industry is perceived. And I actually heard Greg Savage say or write something along these lines that actually the greatest criticism of our industry comes from within, where with people sniping at each other rather than from clients or candidates, and maybe this this inferiority complex is not founded on reality, but it's more of a self perception. But there's definitely a motivation among recruiters for clients and candidates to understand the value we're bringing and to not be perceived as operating primarily on our own self-interest. And I think that is the crux of this whole debate over terminology and what we should call ourselves and are we agents and is that good or bad. And you've hit the nail on the head in bringing the conversation back around to value. Could you elaborate on that point? Like, how do we sell the value of what we do, and what kind of stories are you talking about in terms of the way that we present ourselves in the market?
Yeah. We at RCSA have been doing a lot of work, and I may have mentioned to you in preparing for this chat, Mark, that we do a lot of work with the procurement fraternity here in Australia. One of the other things I said right at the beginning is I'm absolutely fed up with this notion that we are facilitators of the race to the bottom. And again, I'm more talking about agency work here than I am, you know, recruitment placement type stuff. But I just get fed up with it. And then I look and I see that the starting gun of the race to the bottom is fired fundamentally by the consumer. The next in line, okay, firing the second gun to scare you along a bit is procurement. And so when we recently set up a conversation with a whole heap of senior procurement managers, CPOs, the reality is that they sat there and they said, look, guys, you're just not very good at articulating the value that you can offer to us. And sometimes I think that's because we're not given the opportunity. Sometimes I think that's because procurement do come with a predetermined idea as to what we do and what we can't do. I think many of them still do, unfortunately, even though we do, we cut ourselves down. You're absolutely spot on. But I also think that there is this notion that we are the necessary evil. And it perplexes me, I'll be quite honest. I say, if we're the necessary evil, you don't want to use us, don't use us. Go and find somebody yourself. Why are you talking to me if I'm an evil? Do you describe lawyers as a necessary evil? When you go to the doctor, you probably don't want to be there. Is it a necessary evil? Is the dentist the necessary evil? Don't use me. That's fine. I've got plenty of other work going on. So this idea that it's almost we are the whipping boys and girls of the professional sector really irks me. But coming back to this procurement, discussion, we sat there and they said, you just don't define your value particularly well. And I don't think we do. And I think this all comes back to this notion that we sometimes don't believe in the value of ourselves. I'm not a recruiter by trade or by profession. I'm somebody who has spent a lot of time with great recruitment professionals. I think there are a number of those that are clearly undermined, and that comes back to the fact that here in Australia and New Zealand, there isn't a benchmark for the profession. I know in Ireland, Geraldine, who heads up the National Recruitment Federation of Ireland, is looking to establish the first sort of, what you might call master's degree in recruitment. And we've really got to get to that level. But we really have to be better at marketing ourselves, not just marketing our clients. So, again, one of the things we have in Australia is we've established a next-gen campaign, which is to create a whole set of materials that will allow our members to use digital assets and stories and compel people that, hey, if you want to change people's lives, there's only so many roles with the UN. There's only so many things that you're going to do and make good money along the way where you can genuinely contribute to the benefit of somebody. And I I fundamentally believe that really good recruitment consultants and managers do that particularly well. So you might hear something here, and that is that my great passion outside of making sure the law is fit for purpose is ensuring that we don't stand back and just allow others to dictate who we are. But it requires stories, it requires candidates, and it's got to be a human connection. So, yeah, maybe I'd love to get your view on it, Mark, as to do you actually think of all the people that you interview and you engage with, do you think, I don't know, sometimes we sell ourselves short?
Absolutely. And thank you, by the way. I can hear your passion about this, which is awesome. And you said something, which is that along the lines of, and I've actually said these same words myself, if you don't believe in the value that you're bringing, then nobody else is going to either. So you have to start first and foremost by appreciating your own value and really exploring that. And one of the exercises that I encourage all of my coaching clients to undertake is before you do any sales or marketing or anything else, you know, let's actually put together case studies of candidates and clients that you've helped, and even go to the point of interviewing them, you know, ideally 6, 12, 18 months later. And asking them questions about what was the impact. So what difference did this candidate make to the organization in terms of them achieving their goals? And then on the candidate side, you know, what has been the benefit career-wise for you? And then trying to, at minimum, have qualitative data, but ideally have quantitative data to demonstrate the real and measurable value that we're bringing. And to build, so you've used the word stories, which I like, maybe is even better than case studies, because we are dealing with human beings. But, you know, understanding the commercial value that we bring, and also the impact in terms of changing lives, for sure. 100% believe that.
Yeah, but it's got to move from that transactional to, you know, true value adding, doesn't it? We, and again, Greg would say this, most people would say this, we use the word consultant pretty loosely. And one of the other exercises I've been working on here in Australia is to try and work more closely with the, you know, the larger management consulting firms to really understand what is the difference between an ordinary recruitment consultant and a genuine talent consultant, manager, and otherwise. And I think there is a big gap. And I think a lot of it comes back to understanding business, understanding people, understanding emotion, understanding families. And again, I think we probably sell ourselves short in terms of not having more mature age recruitment consultants. Certainly here in Australia, it might be larger in the US or the UK. But I think we should be bringing more to the table and articulating our value. It's something we've done here in Australia with our loveyourworkanz.com. Go and have a look at a whole heap of videos we've put together. I'm now rolling that into the World Employment Confederation, because if anyone knows me, there's three words. What do you want from me? Let's get loud and proud, because you've got a lot to actually offer, but we're not really good at marketing it.
What was that website again, Charles?
Yeah, so it's loveyourworkanz.com. So we developed that because we wanted to, and we get a whole heap of stories from clients who have relied upon working with agencies to develop their business. It's a whole heap of candidates who have gone through career transitions or got into the workforce, and I certainly know the ASA, Richard Valkeast who heads up the ASA in the US, have a whole range of similar stories that have been developed. The funny thing is, I still don't know why our members aren't prepared to share them even more widely. I think that maybe comes back a little bit to that sort of competitive spirit, Mark, that you don't really want to promote somebody else, even though we don't put labels on them or brands on them. But Yeah, I really feel we need to get a global community of positivity around what we do and how we change things. And you know what? There is going to be no better time than now, post-COVID. Here in Australia, we have a massive skill shortage because we've put the walls up around Australia. Never before has our industry been busier and more important. I don't know if that's the same in the US and the UK,
yep.
But gee, we're really well placed to demonstrate our value.
Since you're listening to this podcast, it tells me that you're someone who's interested in personal growth and business improvement. That's something we have in common. I really enjoy listening to podcasts, reading and listening to business books, watching TED Talks. But by far the most important investment I've made in my own development has been working with a coach. It started back in 1999, 2000, when I was working as a recruiter. I hired a coach and he helped me to double my billings in 90 days. It sounds corny, but it was really a life-changing experience. Since then, I've worked with various coaches almost continuously over the years, and it's made a massive difference to my own personal and business success. In fact, that first experience of working with a coach was the catalyst for me ultimately deciding that much as I loved recruitment, my true purpose was to become a coach and enable others to achieve their full potential. Fast forward to today, and I work with recruitment business owners to help them escape the feast and famine roller coaster and create consistent, predictable billings. If you'd like to know more, you can apply for a free strategy session at recruitmentcoach.com/breakthrough. You mentioned we're going to come on to cooperation versus competition in a second because it's something I believe in as well. You mentioned working with the large management consulting firms, and my friend Plamen Ivanov at iIntro actually thinks we should reposition ourselves as management consultants rather than just focusing on, you know, being a recruitment consultant. We are actually management consultants, you know, who specialize within talent acquisition and trying to elevate really what we do so that we're perceived on the same level as kind of the big four practices and this sort of thing. Let's explore this idea of competition versus cooperation. What's your philosophy around this?
It was funny. The other day I did a presentation it was a global audience. I'll tell you what it was. I was presenting to the board of the REC in the UK, and they were just after my ideas. We've been relatively successful here in RCSA. We're loud, we're proud, we're passionate, and people, I think, now want to belong, which is a really important part of what a great association does. So when I was presenting, I tend to get passionate like I am now, and I don't even remember saying it, but I said one of the things I love is that we've transitioned our membership from being competitors to sharers. And she caught it out on social media, on LinkedIn, and I thought, wow, it probably is my finest moment. You know, people ask you, what are you most proud of? You know, 5 years at the helm of RCSA. It was back in, and sorry for everyone who can't, you know, get out of their own home like us in lockdown at the moment, but it was our conference in Fiji. And it was the title, and we've had a whole heap of titles for our conferences, and normally they're, you know, a bit of BS bullshit for anybody who doesn't know what that is. And we ended up going with the power of community because we felt it was critical that we brought people together. And you know what I love? I love the fact that even though it wasn't our largest, it wasn't our most financially successful conference, there was a change there, and it demonstrated that when we come together and we share and we don't compete and we actually realize that we are stronger as one, we are so much better. And what has happened over the course of the next 4 years after that conference is the living of that philosophy. Now, of course, we're still competitors, but the reality is that we know that if we actually look after each other, if we complement each other, if we don't undermine one another, and we realize that the way in which we collectively treat candidates and collectively deliver solutions to clients, even if it's not you, but somebody better than you, our industry wins. And therefore we win and our collective brand improves. So I'm very big on that, and people want to belong, don't they? Especially in this time. I'm going to keep coming back to this. People now realize that we are stronger when we look after each other. So I think this whole philosophy, this whole concept of being better when we're caring and sharing has been reinforced through COVID. So it's been, yeah, really quite opportune. I've just got to make sure we can continue that. And one of the other challenges I'm looking at now is how do we share potentially with the platform economy as well? Do we? I mean, it's naturally us sitting there going, are they competitors? I think we can share with them and guide them. In many ways, they're probably a little bit standoffish because they see themselves as techies rather than, you know, HR people. So anyway, that's probably another story for another time.
Well, no, let's touch on that. Before we talk about platforms and so on, I think one of the things that's emerged post-COVID or that really took off during COVID is this idea of building communities. And because we were sort of isolated physically from each other, there was much more, and also that we were all in such a desperate situation, there seemed vulnerable. Like people were, we were vulnerable. People were more receptive to sharing ideas and to reaching out to each other. And I think that actually has been a huge positive, which hopefully will continue. So during COVID, we launched our own community for recruiters, which has evolved into our Inner Circle coaching and peer advisory group, where recruitment business owners from around the world come together, share ideas, talk about challenges they have in common, and help each other essentially. And I think each of us in our own markets can do something similar. If you can position yourself as a leader within your ecosystem that you serve and create a community where you're contributing, you're adding value, you're facilitating, you're bringing people together, then not only is that going to help the industry you serve, the clients and candidates, but ultimately it will come back to you as well, because as one of the kind of key people who is creating or facilitating that community, it positions you fantastically well without you even having to, you know, hard sell anybody. So I think there's a huge opportunity for community building. That's one of the things that I'm encouraging my clients and listeners to do, is think about this idea of community and how can you leverage that in your own market niche.
It's like we've been thrown out on the street, because in many ways, we have to care for one another. So, you know, people have gone back to the top of the pile rather than necessary technology. So I think in many ways the rise of LinkedIn as well has meant that, you know, this idea that, and when we had it in Australia and New Zealand, people would not send their consultants to a, you know, community-based RCSA event for fear that they would be poached. The fact that digital has meant that anybody could pretty much connect with anybody, and if you can't use LinkedIn, then there's something wrong and you can probably get them. So everyone's going, well, what am I really protecting? So right. Let's get along and let's share and let's go back to values. Let's go back to the fact that, and this is why RCSA, you know, was established, you know, over 50 years ago. It was on the back of the fact that we actually need to look after one another, not poach from one another, not place somebody into a client and then go and recruit them out again very shortly thereafter. So it goes back to these values and fundamentals. And, you know, we have a code of professional conduct that is primarily the main reason that people join RCSA. They want to actually align themselves with a higher standard of behavior. And I love that. I love that fact. And look, there's always going to be those who try and get around it on the edges. But you know what? We've got to educate clients not to use them. And I think this is another big challenge for us, is this clients not really understanding the difference between the good and the bad. And it was only today, I was, in fact, this morning having a chat with a firm out of Canada who are using blockchain to do micro-credentialing. And we're now looking at a project where we can actually identify and codify through blockchain verification of a genuine commitment to professional standards and certifications and treatment of workers. So I think technology has been not only an enabler, but an evolver in that way, which is, guys, let's share, let's come together, let's make it easier to lead clients and candidates to the good guys and gals. So it's a really exciting time, isn't it? It's not the end of our industry. It's probably going to be, in many ways, another lifeblood stream of our industry.
Wow, that's fascinating. I wasn't aware of that. In fact, that's a good segue, Charles, into the final thing I wanted to ask you, which is, you have a unique vantage point as the CEO of RCSA and the VP of the World Employment Confederation. You know, each recruitment business owner really only sees their, you know, piece or their part of the recruitment industry. And you've got a much bigger overview because you've got, you know, hundreds of members and you're seeing the world through each of their collective viewpoints. What do you see as the big challenges as well as the opportunities facing our industry post-COVID?
Finding talent has got to be number one. So that then means that our greatest challenge is to move from being talent traders to talent developers. And many, I think, are still at this point in time not quite ready to make that transition. So, you know, leveraging the reference to your friend who talks about, you know, management consultants rather than recruitment consultants, I absolutely agree. I think we can be talent management consultants. But that means more than just trading people. It means getting behind the scenes and actually understanding a business. What are the needs of the business? What are the impediments to that business achieving what it needs to achieve? Is it even aware of why, you know, whether it's, you know, it's EVP, or whether it's onboarding system, whether it's culture, you know, it's an evolution of what we do. So, I think it's fantastic, but it does require an investment of time and energy. So I think us moving from being talent traders to talent developers is going to be absolutely key. The other one, we've got a campaign about to roll out here, which is retain your recruiter. We're absolutely sick of this notion that in you know, perm recruitment that we still allow clients to come to us and say, hey, we're going to use you and we're going to use five others. And despite the fact that, you know, you're putting a whole heap of time and energy into it, we're going to take all that and we're going to use you as part of your process, but we could potentially give you $0 at the end of this game. No other profession would do that. And again, what does it do? It perpetuates this idea that we will send forward bad candidates. Why would any recruitment firm provide the best candidate if they could go and sell in a candidate tight market that, not sell, but offer that candidate to somebody else? And then that reinforces this idea that we're really not fair income or genuine in the way in which we want to provide a professional service. So we're saying to everybody, do not engage in contingent perm recruitment. Say, if you want to work with us, here we are. You can retain us. Otherwise, go and find somebody else. And in most cases, we've determined 8 out of 10 cases, they will actually come back to you and want to work with you as well. So, you know, there's a couple, but we've really got to develop our people as well. And I think in many ways, look, it might be different in other countries. There's still a lot of chatter, a little bit too much talk about developing our people internally and not actually delivering on that. I think because of the talent shortage in recruitment consultants here in Australia and New Zealand and around the world as well, we are going to have to invest in our own people as well. So most of this comes back to this idea of how are we going to develop people rather than simply trade people. And I'm really excited about the fact that we're almost going to have to be forced into this position. And I don't think we'll ever look back once we make that transition as well.
Wow, that's incredible. I'm really interested that you're, as an organization, RCSA is promoting transitioning from, you know, this contingency first, you know, success only, first past the post kind of model, outdated business model to a retained one where, you know, the recruiter actually gets paid for the work that they're doing, rather than a situation where if you are one of five agents, then there's, you know, you're literally working for free 80% of the time, which just doesn't
make any sense whatsoever. And we're developing a playbook. Happy to share it with you. Might be another opportunity for a conversation around that, you know, financially, how much better our members do those. And there are many of them who have made that transition to, you know, retained only or exclusive only, whichever way we want to describe it. But it just makes so much sense, doesn't it? Yeah, we're looking at more playbooks around that as well, so that how we can assist our members to really develop and evolve themselves. And why? Because they get confidence by realizing that other firms have made the same decision. What I've tended to find in this industry is if they think, or a client tells them, wow, you're the only one who's actually said that to us, it's normally garbage. And by actually sharing, goes back to stories and being, you know, solid and one, united in what we do, we ordinarily end up being a lot better. Let's face it, as much as we have a few problems with the unions who don't like the agency worker side over here for a whole range of reasons, we're a union and we should be, you know, coming together as one within the realms of our competition law, of course, but coming together as one to actually articulate what we know to be the best outcome for client, best outcome for candidate, and ultimately the most sustainable solution for our own businesses. Because we've got a right to run sustainable, profitable businesses, and then we can invest back into the people that we employ and the people that we place. And I think we've got to be a bit stronger, mate. I think we've got to get out there and fly the flag and be proud of what we do and shout down people at the dinner table if they want to suggest that we're not offering value. We do, but we've got to be better at articulating it.
Amazing. That's a great place to finish up, Charles. So thank you so much for all your wisdom and insight today. If people want to learn more about RCSA, the website is rcsa.com.au, and definitely link up with Charles Cameron on LinkedIn as well. Charles, thank you so much. This has been fantastic.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Great to have a conversation with you. And everybody out there, get out there and get a bit louder and a bit prouder. We've got a great story to tell. And thanks for helping me, Mark, tell my story.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button and I'll see you next time.